I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. Payman Ruhanifard has his work cut out for him as the superintendent of the Camden Public Schools, which was taken over by the state last year. It's the lowest performing district in the state. Only 20% of elementary students are proficient in state tests in language arts and a third in math, and about half of the students drop out before graduation. The superintendent spent the fall listening to students, to parents, teachers, and residents about what they wanted for their schools. He just introduced a strategic plan for the district, including plans to increase safety and transparency, teacher and principal development, more Renaissance schools, and the creation of a residential school for at-risk students. Payman Ruhanifard was superintendent, is the former chief strategy and innovations officer for the Newark Public Schools. He worked for the chancellor of the New York City Department of Education. He taught sixth grade in West Harlem for 2 years with Teach for America. A native of Iran, he grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. And Payman Ruhanifard, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be with you.
You know, I noticed in some of the reporting that you've been doing and what you've heard from a lot of the resident students, teachers in Camden is that safety has been the number one issue, something that you learned on your listening tour. Are the schools unsafe in Camden?
Well, I mean, you're exactly right that that was the first, second, and third issue that were raised to us during our listening tour and in all of our conversations subsequent, and really the listening and evaluating never ends. And so we also did a survey on top of the conversations we've had with our community, and we did a student survey. Almost every student responded. Half of our elementary school students, and this is as of May, told us that they don't feel safe in hallways and bathrooms. 80% of our middle school and high school students told us they don't feel safe going to and from school. So one of the very first initiatives that I started was, first of all, gathering the mayor and the police chief Scott Thompson to initiate a safe corridors program. So we've put a few initiatives in place to make sure that at least in the commute to school and from school, we have police officers that are watching over high incident passageways. But it's no secret that crime is an issue in Camden.
And if students don't feel safe and perhaps even teachers don't feel safe, does that affect learning?
Absolutely. I mean, where there is not a nurturing learning environment that sets high expectations for students, they cannot achieve at the highest levels.
As I said in my introduction, these are struggling schools, the lowest performing schools in the state of New Jersey. You have a big job on your hands to try to address that. Where do you want to start? I mean, we talked about safety, but where do you start?
Well, you know, it's managing an urban school district, 26 traditional district schools, 11 charter schools, and a few Renaissance schools potentially opening next year, one that was already approved. We've got our challenges. We've got our complexities to deal with. So I wouldn't say it's any one initiative that we're leading with. Our strategic plan highlights five promises. We lead with safety. We talk about better facilities. We talk about how to create excellent schools. And fourth, we talk about parent friendliness and parent engagement. And then fifth, we want to make sure that our central office operates with a sense of efficiency and effectiveness and urgency.
And I want to talk about all of that. But I also noticed in a letter that you wrote after visiting schools and talking with people in Camden that there are great teachers, there are great parents, yeah, they're great students. And I don't want to, you know, in a sense, whitewash what might be going on, some of the good things that might be going on in Camden.
Yeah, and I've really immersed myself in the time since I arrived. I'm now 5 months into the job, and there are some incredibly committed individuals here across a number of different stakeholder groups. So whether, you know, parents I've met along the way, students I've met, who have defied all odds to graduate high school and graduate with a four-year diploma and live a fulfilling career. You know, what I am constantly thinking about and wondering deeply about how we can address it is those stories that we hear, the success stories, are too few and far between.
Right.
It just shouldn't be that hard. But you're exactly right. I mean, it's a really tremendous sense of community that we have there, and the spirit, the generosity, the grit, the determination of that city really mirrors that of the best qualities of any city in the country. And we want to build upon what's working and work with the community to implement this plan.
What makes it so hard, though? As you said, I mean, there are obviously individual examples of people, as you said, that have overcome some of the odds to graduate and go on. But what makes it so hard for these kids?
I think it's a combination of a lot of different factors, and we're not here to point the finger at any one issue or any one group or any one person. You know, it's a systemic failure that we're seeing here. It starts at the central office. It starts just, you know, the issues the district has faced for a very long time as it relates to budgets and inefficiencies. I mean, certainly poverty plays a huge part in all of this. I just think it's a confluence of factors, and we're just trying to, you know, chart the path forward and not necessarily look backwards and point the finger.
Governor Christie in his State of the State talked about you, in a sense called you out, also the superintendent of the Newark schools in New Jersey, saying about Camden and going back, I think he got his dates wrong, but nonetheless going back a couple of years, that they were just three graduates that actually met the SAT requirements for college level work. Is that how we should think of graduates in Camden?
No.
Is it more than that?
No, that's not how you should think about it. It's certainly much more than that. You know, that data point was taken from a board meeting. We presented out our SAT results. And when you see a data point like that, it's easy for the media to kind of have one perspective on it and for the governor to have his perspective on it. The way we presented it was part of a much broader, complex story. So the SAT benchmark for college readiness is a score of 1550. And what that says, according to the College Board's research, is that there's a 65% chance if you score 1550 or higher that you're going to get a B- or better in college. That's all that means. We have many, many, many students who go into matriculate into a four-year diploma, four-year college program, or a two-year associate's program that score below 1550. And we acknowledged that in our meeting. We talked about how that's the case. We pointed to the many students who are sitting there in the room with us who have gone on to lead successful lives. What that data point highlights, though, is the lack of rigor that we see, because a lot of our students do matriculate into a four-year college program and then ultimately have to take remedial courses. They then take on more debt. They then potentially drop out. So at Camden County Community College, 75% of the students who enroll have to take remedial courses. And the national trends show you that when students take remedial courses, they have a 1 in 4 chance of making it through.
Mm-hmm. But which says that they're really not ready for college level
work. Exactly. I mean, it does speak to preparation. But again, we do have many students who matriculate, many students who complete the program. We just wanted to highlight that there are multiple pathways to success in life. So some students should have a vocational career technical opportunity. And right now, they don't often have that choice, and Camden, it's made for them.
Well, I also noticed in some of the things that the students said to you was what they wanted higher standards. They wanted higher expectations for their work. It sounded like they want demanding work for them to do.
Yeah, it is always really interesting to hear directly from our students. And you're exactly right. We asked a number of questions about, you know, the level of stimulation and the challenges they see in the classroom. And resoundingly, they told us that they like to see more rigor and they like to be challenged more regularly.
And why aren't they? I mean, what? And I know that's a whole complicated issue. But as you diagnose that, what do you see?
Yeah, I think across the board, we could set higher expectations. At the same time, I think you've got to be careful in the way you're evaluating any one data point. I'm sure that if you polled me as a third grader sitting in a classroom in a small town in Tennessee, I may have felt one way about my teacher that may have evolved over time. So, you know, we just want to be careful. But we have heard from a number of different community members and educators and central office staff. And so we're slowly peeling the onion here, but there's no doubt in our minds that the expectations need to be set higher. But that's, again, not to say that we don't have committed people doing great work in the system.
You're the state superintendent of the schools, appointed by, or I guess chosen by Chris Christie, the governor, to run the schools. So do you answer to the state? Do you answer to the people in Camden? Who are your bosses? Who do you think of as your bosses?
I am laser focused on the families of Camden, the community members, working really closely with our local elected officials. I certainly, on paper, on an organizational chart, report into the commissioner and the governor. But that's not the way I think about my charge. I think about what we're doing as working with the community to build a plan and chart the path forward, because this is our time in Camden. I really think this is a unique opportunity for us to work together with the community and turn the schools around.
There is a concern, I'm sure you've heard it as well, that when the state took over the schools, it meant bringing in, you know, private corporate, it's kind of the private corporate takeover of the district, of the schools there, perhaps the possibility of busting the union. Mm-hmm. How do you answer those concerns?
Well, I think there's a lot of myth. There's a lot of misinformation out there. So what you're referring to is the concept of a renaissance school. which is a byproduct of the Urban Hope Act. And you do often hear people use the word corporate. You know, the reality is these are nonprofit groups who empower educators to run great schools. And the other benefit to Renaissance schools is that the Urban Hope Act allows for increased facilities funding. And so the second promise that we made was that we need to do better with our state of facilities. I mean, half of our buildings were developed before 1928, and they're in deplorable state, several of them. Camden High School in particular has been neglected for decades. And so the Urban Hope Act does provide additional funding because too often the School Development Authority doesn't move at the speed of light, and we do feel a sense of urgency. So anyways, to go back to your point, you know, these are nonprofit groups that run excellent schools, and we're looking for proven educators. We're not trying to experiment here. And so they're not making profits. They're not corporate. And the union busting thing is also a bit of a myth because this isn't a right-to-work state. Any school, charter or Renaissance, has the right to collectively bargain. And a number of our charters in Camden do have a unionized staff.
I know the Renaissance schools, the first one will be opening in the fall. It's a KIPP
Correct.
School. Does it make sense, though, to wait to see how KIPP does before adding to the numbers of Renaissance schools?
Well, the way I think about that is the team that applied runs a number of schools in Newark already. So we already know their track record. They run some of the best schools in the state of New Jersey, serving lowest income students in the city of Newark. So I think that we already know what their track record is.
A quote I ran across from you is that you, and perhaps coming from parents as well, which is people don't care if it's a public school or a charter school or a Renaissance school. They just want a school for their kids.
That's right. I mean, that's what we heard from our parents. Now, there are certainly many other opinions about the governance structure of a school, and we want to be sensitive to those conversations. But I'll tell you, directly from our parents, a school is a school is a school. They care about safety first. They think they care about the school being in a modern facility, and they care about being a nurturing environment that sets high expectations for kids, and that's directly from the mouths of our parents. Now, there are other community members and there are other stakeholders who have a say in these conversations, and they're, of course, different opinions, but you're exactly right. That's what we're hearing from our parents.
And what are you hearing from teachers? We're almost up on a break here, but go ahead.
Well, teachers are telling us right now that they need more support, and rightfully so. I mean, we're in complex times here. We're aligning our curriculum to Common Core, and this is a national trend, as you probably know, and that requires a lot of troubleshooting, and we have to provide them the support. So we're focused on providing better professional development, ensuring they have the resources they need.
And will all these schools be held essentially to the same standards, whether it's a charter, a public, or a Renaissance?
Absolutely, and I think that is the role of a district to ensure that all schools, whether they're district, charter, or Renaissance, they're serving the same students, they're playing by the same rules, and that they're performing at the levels our students deserve.
And that's Payman Ruhanifard. He's the new superintendent of the Camden Public Schools, joining us in this hour of Radio Times to talk about his vision for the schools. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back.
Allentown Symphony Orchestra presents Classical Music for Film, Saturday, February 8th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, February 9th at 3 p.m. The ASO performs classical music behind well-known Hollywood movies, such as Barber's Adagio for Strings from Platoon, Schubert's Symphony No. 8 from The Minority Report, Mendelssohn's Symphony No. 4 from Breaking Away, and many more. Featuring a multimedia production, Allentown Symphony Orchestra, Classical Music for Film. For more information, millersymphonyhall.org.
I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for listening to Radio Times. And if you are a member or supporter of WHYY, I thank you for that, too. If you've never been a supporter, take that next step and become a member. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499. You can also pledge online at WHYY.org. Let me suggest that you become a sustainer at the $10 a month level. Your pledge will be automatically renewed until you tell us to stop. It's easier for you, and and it's definitely easier for us. Here's that phone number, 1-888-345-9499. Again, pledge online at WHYY.org. You know what you get by listening to WHYY 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of news and information and entertainment. On Radio Times, we keep you up to speed on local, national, and international news and introduce you to interesting people and ideas, and you are part of the conversation. 1-888-345-9499. Thanks very much. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Payman Ruhanafard. He's the new superintendent of the Camden Public Schools, joining us in this hour of Radio Times to talk about his vision for this district, this struggling district in many ways. We're taking calls again at 1-888-477-9499. You mentioned how many schools in Camden are, what, almost 100 years old. Where do you get the money to build new schools in Camden?
Well, we're taking two routes, and we're pursuing both very vigorously here. So the School Development Authority is our first path, and we actually just met with the head of the School Development Authority, Charles McKinney, yesterday, and advocated on behalf of Camden High and a number of other school buildings. And, you know, if you walked into Camden High, your heart would break. Over the winter holiday, we had an AC unit in the library that froze, that then thawed into the library, turned it into a sauna, and then it leaked and flooded three classrooms underneath it. And that's just the latest incident that we're facing over there. So we're starting at the School Development Authority, which you know, we believe certainly owes us, and we believe in the leadership of Mr. McKenna, and are cautiously optimistic. And at the same time, the Urban Hope Act is our other opportunity here. And you know, it's a new piece of legislation that allows us to address our state of facilities either through renovations or through ground-up construction.
And does the Hope Act, if there's money that comes from the Hope Act, would it go to a public school, just to a Renaissance school, to charter schools?
It is attached specifically to a Renaissance school.
Right. So there's money to develop Renaissance schools, but not necessarily to develop the public schools?
Well,
or the other public schools?
Well, I would consider Renaissance School to be a public school, but the School Development Authority would help us address the traditional district schools.
The students in Camden, as I understand it, get the equivalent of $23,000 a year. That's the money that's earmarked for education, which is a lot of money, a lot more than Philadelphia. It's kind of how you think of suburban schools with that kind of money. How can there be money problems in a district with that much money coming in?
Yeah. Well, you could argue that $23,000 is more than what most suburban schools spend. So it is an issue. We have not efficiently invested our resources historically, and we are right now evaluating our current budget, and we believe that there will be some systemic issues, some structural deficits that I've inherited, and we're still trying to find some answers to some critical questions. You know, we don't want to necessarily look backwards and point the finger, but the money has been inefficiently deployed. And what we are focused on is ensuring that it's going down to the school level. So it's not being trapped within the bureaucracy itself. And when I first got into the job, I can tell you that we had multiple teams in the central office that were pushing into our schools, sharing redundant information and at times conflicting information. So we had become this kind of onerous bureaucracy. And so we want to just make sure that the resources are going down at the school level where our educators need them.
Well, it sounds like then reducing staff at the central office or streamlining services staff at the central office?
Streamlining is exactly right. It's complicated, though, because while we are over-invested in certain areas, we're actually under-resourced in other areas. So we're going to have to both invest and streamline at the same time. So it's a very complicated picture right now.
And are you saying under-invested in the classroom?
There are actually certain parts of the within a school, I would say, that we're under-resourced. So just to give you an example, most people probably wouldn't guess this about Camden, but we have a smart board in just about every single classroom, almost a one-to-one ratio. But we don't often have trained staff who know how to troubleshoot and work those smart boards. So a lot of our schools share a technology coordinator, and that shouldn't be the case, right? So
you more technology.
Exactly. So we need to make certain investments like that at the school level, and then again, we need to streamline in other places. And so this applies to both the central office and schools.
I know from this plan that you also want to invest in more student support, social and emotional services, as you said, career and technical education. How important is that?
It's critical. And one of the unique benefits of the Renaissance schools are that the district actually can issue an RFP The district then initiates a contract, and we can mandate certain services, and we can align those mandates to what the community is asking for. And we heard resoundingly that we need more social and emotional mm-hmm. support. So that's actually something that we placed into our RFP for Renaissance Schools, that each of these applicants has to come with a partner to provide those wraparound services. And at the same time, we're committing to creating similar health centers in our district schools as well, so that it's not just about the Renaissance Schools, but it's very critical.
Are we talking about more counselors, for instance? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, so we want to build upon what we already have, and our schools right now, most of them have a school psychologist. All of them have two nurses, which, you know, if I think about Philadelphia and some of the conversations you all have had,
yes.
we have a nice baseline to work with. It's more just ensuring that we have the full suite of services and there's a continuum of support for our students.
But would it be fair to say that the kids living in a poor urban district are in need of social services? I mean, that they come with specific kinds of needs to school?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And why? Because they're not getting it at home? I know you don't want to make broad generalizations about people, but it's, you know, poor people struggle.
So, I mean, certainly the support at home isn't there for every kid. We have many students who are homeless and live in shelters and others that aren't getting the parental or guardian support that they deserve. But it's also more complex than that, right? So I think about our special education rate. 19% of our students have an IEP. But more problematically, two-thirds of them are in a self-contained setting.
Meaning?
So they're in the most restrictive setting. So it's six students, one licensed special ed teacher, and a paraprofessional. I actually think we have an overclassification problem. I don't think that that represents our student body. And so, you know, we've got to make sure that we are, and this is in the part of the plan that you're alluding to right now, we've got to audit the services we're providing our students who are at most risk, our neediest students, and better understand the process by which we're classifying them, understand their needs, and again, look at the quality of the instruction they're mm-hmm. receiving. So, I mean, you're right. They're facing certain challenges in their life, but I also think that we're putting a label on them. We're putting a stigma by you know, handing an IEP to every student, putting them in a restrictive setting, and they're not with their general education peers. So I think it shows the complexities of an urban school district.
Does it also show why it can be expensive?
Without question. So there are certain incentives, right, for a school district and even for a parent. When an IEP comes into the equation, there's more funding for the district. There's more of a payment to that family through Social Security. So there are certain complexities there, yeah. and we're trying to evaluate that. And we noted in our plan that we need to do a full audit of our special ed classification process.
I know part of this plan is the possibility of opening a residential school for at-risk students. Who do you consider at risk? I mean, we're just talking about kids having IEPs.
So this is an idea that we're really excited about. And right now it's in the abstract. It actually came about from some conversations we had with a few neighborhood groups, one being the Liberty Park Homeowners Association. And the idea is exciting because when we think about, and to answer your question more directly, students who are coming from shelters or homeless students, they require that 24-hour day intervention. And what we heard from some of our families was that it'd just be tremendous if they had a dormitory and a campus where they could attend school. And there are various ways you could play this out. There are various kind of enrollment policies we could insert for this school. But right now, it's just a conceptual idea that we're mm-hmm. having with the community.
But the idea is that they would go to their neighborhood school, but they would have a place to live. Is that what it is? Or would it be almost like a boarding school?
It would be more like a boarding school. So there are a few models like this across the country, and you know, we're excited to think about it coming to Camden. But devil's in the details here because you know there's certainly the capital required to develop the facility, but there's also a huge operating funding need because if it costs us right now $23,000 to run a school from 8 to 3, you can imagine it costs a little bit more to do a boarding school.
And that's Payman Ruhanifard, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. He's the new superintendent for the Camden Public School. He was chief strategy and innovations officer for the Newark Public Schools in New Jersey. He worked for the chancellor of the New York City Department of Education. He taught sixth grade in West Harlem for 2 years with Teach for America, spending the hour talking about his plans for the teachers, the students, the parents, the residents of Camden. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Let me get Deborah from Trenton to join us. And Deborah, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is regarding, having been a public school advocate working in Trenton, in Camden now for over 3 years, I've heard some very heart-wrenching stories about parents who have chosen to send their kids to charter schools as an attempt to get a safer environment and a better education, only to be counseled out because their children have special needs that the charter school is unwilling to facilitate the needs of. So I'm wondering what the superintendent can do to ensure that we don't create a two-tiered educational system where the charter schools are allowed to cream the children that are easiest and most motivated to educate, leaving the traditional public school system with that much higher concentration of IEPs and special needs.
Deborah, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Payman, go ahead.
Deborah, it's a great question and a great point. It's actually addressed in our strategic plan. So under our fourth promise in trying to become more service-oriented to our parents, our students deserve better than that. Our parents deserve better than that. And we hear that criticism all the time. And what we have proposed to implement is a universal enrollment system that ensures that every single school is playing by the same set of policies, same set of rules. And this is an idea that I'll tell you has created some anxiety within the charter universe. And so, you know, some of their principals and their founders have come to us and said, hey, we want to work with you on this, but you could sense the anxiety. And I think that's a healthy conversation for us to have, because we want to make sure that everyone's playing by the same rules and we don't have any cherry picking. We don't have any counseling out. And we often see these issues in the district schools as well. So it does happen on both sides, but you certainly can you hear the criticism more on the charter.
Deborah, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And as we know from Philadelphia, I mean, there are good public schools. They're not so good public schools. They're good charter schools, and they're not so good charter schools as well. Do you feel in Camden that you have the charter schools that you need in that city?
There are quality concerns with our charter schools as well. And so one of the benefits of me being part of the state, an agent in the state, if you will, is that we work directly with the commissioner to evaluate our charters who are up for renewal. Mm-hmm. And so, again, this goes back to the point about the role of the district being to hold all schools to high standards. And so we're gonna evaluate charter schools in the same way we think about the performance of our district schools. You're exactly right.
Governor Christie seems to be toying with the idea of a longer school day, maybe even a longer school year. Do you like that idea? Does that make sense to you?
Right now, we're waiting to see the specifics of his proposal. So it's not outlined in our strategic plan, you may have noticed. So we just want to hear the specifics that he's proposing.
But on the face of it, and this would not be the only district that's thinking about this as well, which is that we have a school year that's kind of based on an agrarian model. And here we are in the 21st century, and perhaps it's time to rethink the schedule of learning.
Well, I think there's no question that when students are spending more time in the classroom and in extracurricular activities, they're going to perform better socially, intellectually, emotionally. But the devil's in the details when it comes to a proposal like this. And the other thing I would add is that a number of our charter schools and the Renaissance School that was approved to open this fall, the KIPP School, they're on very long school days as it is. So I know that the KIPP School in particular, they start at 7:30, go till 6:00, 7:00. We do have some schools that are already implementing a longer school day. But it's tricky with our district school and our collective bargaining agreement.
This plan that you have outlined calls for pre-K students to be in – all pre-K students in Camden to be enrolled in schools. How many are enrolled today? What's the stat on that?
89% of our 3- and 4-year-olds are enrolled in a pre-K program. So quite high relative to other school districts. And one of the benefits of being an Abbott district is that we get the incremental funding. So this is not a cost issue for us. It is simply a roll-up-our-sleeve exercise, knock on doors, and make sure that we get 89 to 100. So we're really excited about this, and we've got a really terrific early childhood team. And, it's just about, you know, applying the energy.
And are they knocking on people's doors to find out, you know, if there's a 3- or 4-year-old or a 5-year-old?
You know, we just announced the plan on Monday, but they've got a plan in place. Miss Katrina McCombs runs Early Childhood, and she's really excited about implementing this plan.
Mm. One of the things that Chris Christie said about you at the State of the State was that you were knocking on the doors of students who had essentially dropped out of school in Camden, trying to get them back. True story?
Well, I got to give credit to our team. So this was one of the early initiatives that we had about 350 students, at least according to our data, our database that had left school over the last 12 months. And so we went, made some phone calls. We've got an attendance, office of attendance, that does a lot of this work. And we got about 40 to 50 of them to re-enroll. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting. It's encouraging.
So why do kids drop out of school? And it's true in this city. It's true in other cities. It's true in all districts. Why do kids drop out?
I think you touched on it as far as some of the student survey results. I think that safety plays into it. I think lack of parental support plays into it. It's so complex, and it's case by case. But what we talk about a lot in our internal team, in our cabinet, is we need to make sure that and we believe deeply the school is the unit of change, and there's got to be a pull, right? There are a lot of community members, a lot of nonprofits, a lot of incredible people in Camden who are pushing our students to do well and pushing them back into the classroom. But we got to make sure that the schools also pull those kids back in.
In fact, going back to some of the survey work, a fair number of students saying they didn't like school, they wouldn't recommend their friends to go to the school that they attend.
So,
you know, talk to kids, they're going to give you an honest answer.
Yeah, they are. So if you, again, polled me when I was in third grade, barely spoke English and was getting picked on every day, I probably didn't like school either. But I do think that when one out of three students is telling us that they would prefer to go to a different school and they want more options, that is something we need to be mindful of.
Right. Let me get that. Looks like Camilla from Allentown to join us. Camilla, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
One of the things that I never hear discussed is having the will, skill, and courage to ensure that authentic relationships between and among teachers and students are put in place. Because of internalized biases and stereotypes prevent most educators from successfully educating historically marginalized students of color.
Well, I'm not sure where you're getting that information that most students, teachers are not able to have a relationship with students of color. But I think it's important to talk about the relationship, Payman, between teachers and their students and the important role that plays in a student's life and probably in a teacher's life as well. You were a teacher for a couple of years.
That's right. I think we have some incredibly committed and caring teachers in our district. And so when I walk into a school, I sense the nurturing environment. And so that, in many respects, is less of a concern for us because I do think that the thoughtfulness and the care is there. I think what we need to think more deeply about is raising the bar of excellence and making sure the high expectations are there.
You told us, we were talking before going on the air, that you missed teaching. You taught for 2 years, sixth grade, East Harlem.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you miss?
I miss being around students. We were joking about the fact that the students that I spend the most time with right now are our advisory board representatives. So every high school in Camden puts two students on our advisory board, and so I see them twice a month, and I've gotten to know a few of them pretty well. I still keep up with some of my old students from when I was teaching, but I mean there's no greater privilege than serving our youth, and it was a tremendous experience for me.
You also said, I think I can say this, is that your first year as a student, as a teacher, was perhaps what the hardest first year on the job you've had.
It was challenging. I taught at arguably one of the toughest schools in all of New York City. So when I got there, it was on the persistently dangerous list of 12 schools, and out of 1,800 schools in New York City, that's a big deal. So we had a lot of incidents in our school. 9% of the students were proficient in literacy when I was there. It was a school that was wedged inside of a 35-story affordable housing facility. And so, the impact of poverty in my students was palpable and real. The dysfunction within our school was real. So it was a challenging time.
And that's Payman Ruhanifard, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, the new superintendent for the Camden Public Schools. We're going to take some more calls at 1-888-477-9499. Again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back.
Open Connections, a progressive educational environment, supports WHYY. At Open Connections, youth ages 2 through 18 attend programs 1 to 3 days a week from September to June. Guided by their principles of respect, freedom, responsibility, and natural learning, Open Connections serves as a community base for young people and their families seeking an innovative, collaborative, and process-conscious educational environment. An open house at their campus in Newtown Square is Sunday, February 9th at 4 p.m. Details at openconnections.org.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. WHYY is your trusted source for news and information, whether it's happening here in the Delaware Valley, across the nation, or around the world. Surely that's worth your pledge of support. Here's the phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499, and you can pledge online at WHYY.org. This is the winter membership campaign here at WHYY, when we take just a few minutes out of our regularly scheduled program to remind you of the important role that you play as a listener. Listener member. Your pledge of support pays for programs like Radio Times, Fresh Air, All Things Considered, Morning Edition, Newsworks Tonight, and much, much more, and of course, all that we offer online. We have goals for every break, for every show, and the sooner we meet those goals, the sooner we can end this drive. We believe a show like Radio Times that can go deep and long is invaluable to understanding our complicated world. We believe you believe that too. 1-888-345-9499. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're just joining us, Payman Ruhanifard is our guest, the new superintendent for the Camden Public Schools, talking about his vision for the district. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You have a very interesting personal story yourself. You were born in Iran. Fled with your family, fled under what sounded like very scary and difficult circumstances. Do you have memories of your early years in Iran?
So bits and pieces. I was 4 years old when we took off, and we came home one day. And I've got a younger brother. He's 1 year younger. We came home one day, and everything in our house was taken. My dad was fired from his position as a government employee at a dairy company. And literally in the dark of the night, we hired a guy to smuggle us across the border. Wow. So I remember parts of that story. I remember being in the back of a truck crossing the border into Pakistan. I remember living in Pakistan. But there are definitely some parts that I don't have a great memory of.
Your family's Baha'i. That's your faith. That's your faith today. And we know a bit about how the Baha'i have been persecuted in Iran over the years.
Yeah. So there has been a systematic persecution of the Baha'is. That there are still some real challenges there. And we still have some family. We keep in touch, and we're making sure that they're safe and sound. And thankfully, it's gotten better since the time we left, but it's still not perfect.
And is that why your family fled? Because of your faith?
It is. It is. So effectively, like back then, as soon as they discover, and usually it's word of mouth, the government kind of sends their paramilitary out to get an understanding of where the Baha'is live, and then they ask you to recant. So really, the day came where two government officials came to our door, sought my dad, asked him to recant his faith. He didn't. And then he was put on a list, and then a few weeks after that, his job fired him, and then we came home and everything was taken and our assets were frozen. So it was a very systematic effort then. Again, it has improved, but even today, Baha'is can't get a secondary education in Iran. So a lot of our cousins will travel here and to go to college or go to high school.
Yeah. You spent some time in some refugee camps in Pakistan, in Europe.
Yeah.
When we think of a refugee camp, we think of tents and all that. Is that what we're talking about?
It wasn't quite tents. It was more just kind of like dilapidated tenement-style living. And so we were in Pakistan for about a year. And then Vienna, we went there because we had heard that it was easy at that time to get a visa. So we were just kind of following the trail of other folks before us. And my grandparents were actually forced out of the country a couple years before us. My grandfather was a fairly prominent physician in his community, so they sought him out pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So we kind of knew the path we had to take, but my parents were really stubborn and wanted to do everything they could. Push came to shove, and we needed to get out. And a lot of it also had to do with the fact that my brother and I wouldn't have even had an opportunity to go to school, even if we were able to kind of stay under the radar. So they knew the day would come.
And you started what, first grade here in Nashville, where they landed?
Yeah, we landed in a small town south of Nashville, and I was for the most part blissfully ignorant of being.
Did you speak any of the language at all?
I didn't speak any language when we got there. You obviously pick it up pretty quickly as a young child. The challenges of being different in the South really didn't become real for me until I was a little bit older. Right. So, I had a great childhood, and our parents really looked after us. They were the ones that really struggled the most, learning a new language in their 30s, new jobs. Their actual degrees didn't transfer over. So my dad was an engineer, and then he was pumping gas in a small town in Tennessee. So they really sacrificed for us.
Well, as we know, parents play such an important role when it comes to the education of their children. I mean, I think you're a good example of that.
Yeah, and this is a story that I shared. I didn't get into some of the specifics I'm sharing with you now when I was going to town hall conversation. But what I said to them was, and this is to the broader community, if it weren't for the education my parents received, they would not have persevered through those struggles. And that's what they reinstilled my brother and I every single day, that their education afforded them the opportunity that he and I now have and for us to take our education seriously. And there are always a lot of heads nodding when you share that. And you know, our students, when we polled them as that part of that student survey, 96% of our elementary school students said that their parents care about their education.
Right.
So the care is there. I think that we certainly have a lot of work to do to educate the adults in our city and to make sure that you know they're reinforcing high expectations for their students at home, because the overall level of rigor both in the classroom and at home isn't there. But I do think we have some really caring adults in the city looking after their kids.
Let me get back to our callers. Looks like we have Michael from Westampton, New Jersey. And Michael, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning. Thanks
morning.
For taking my phone call.
You're welcome.
Hi. My name is Mike, and I'm a school counselor, educator, but professional school counseling. I'm curious for the new superintendent in Camden, to what extent have you engaged your professional school counselors in beginning to meet the needs, or your forecast and the vision to meet the needs of students, not only their academic needs, but also their personal, social, and career development, and engaging with counselors and helping to do that?
Michael, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so this is actually called out in our strategic plan. We have not to date done enough, and a lot of this is happening on my watch, and I'll be the first to tell you that, Michael. So we need to ensure that we're better training our counselors across all of our schools. I don't think that we're approaching it in a consistent, systematic way. We've started some conversations with Rutgers University as they start a new center to help think about whether they could provide us those professional development opportunities and work directly with our school counselors. I've met some great and committed school counselors as I visited school to school to school, but we don't approach the work, we don't approach the conversations with our students in a very consistent way.
Mm. Meaning that there's some that are doing a better job than others, or you just need a more rigorous standards or more?
Well, just like a protocol, like, you know, if a student is interested in X, Y, or Z, here are the options you put before them. Here are the steps to the conversation. Here are the resources that you should make available to them. I think some schools have better access to resources just because that individual has better connections, more social capital, what have you. So right now, we just got to make sure that we bring that consistent level of implementation.
Michael, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Talking with Payman Ruhanifar, the new superintendent for the Camden Public Schools. I know a lot of districts, not just Camden, are trying to gear up for these Common Core standards, which really looks like it approaches education differently and tests for different kind of information. Does that feel like a big step up for the students in the city?
Well, I think it's important. I very much appreciate the shift away from kind of skill-based evaluation and more critical thinking. And I think that those are the skills our students need to survive in the real world. And it shouldn't just all be about kind of rote, drill, and kill skill-based instruction. And I think a lot of our educators believe in that. All of our, you know, the teachers I've spoken to understand the rationale. Now, there are complexities to aligning curriculum to Common Core,
right,
and thinking about the tests that are being administered. But I do think it is a very important shift and the right one for our students.
Are there union negotiations going on? Or I know that that, you know, there are some contracts that are yet to be signed.
Yeah, we have actually six expired contracts across our five labor units. That is what I inherited, and add to the list of challenges. And you know, what we've shared with each of our unit leaders is that as soon as the strategic plan is unveiled, we're going to sit down and begin those conversations in earnest. So really in the next few weeks, we're initiating those discussions, and we're excited to do that because our teachers deserve to have a live contract, and it's been expired now for a few months, and we're excited to start the conversation.
And I know there's probably much you don't want to say about that, but I mean, would it be fair to say it's certainly true here in Philadelphia that pay, benefits, things like that, that those are on the line in Camden?
So tough to say what is currently on on the table and what's not on the table. We haven't had that initial conversation yet, but we're going to be transparent with the community as soon as we have a better sense of what's important to the Camden Education Association, the CEA, which is our largest unit. We're gonna share that out.
Let me get looks like Larry from Elkins Park to join us on Radio Times. And Larry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
My question has to do with money, and I'm wondering what percentage of the total budget goes into non-teaching roles. If you take out the teachers and the principals and the advisors and the upkeep of the buildings, mm-hmm. how much extra money goes somewhere else? How much goes into the bureaucracy?
You know,
I don't understand. If you only have 10 kids in a class, you have $230,000 in that classroom. Teachers are getting less than half of that. Where's the money going?
That's a fair question. Go ahead.
It is a fair question. I don't have the answer off the top of my head, but I'll share with you a few data points that I think will address it. So our student-to-teacher ratio is 9.3 to 1. So the vast majority of our resources are going to teachers, just given how low of a ratio that is when compared to other school districts. One of the lowest in the country.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. So our central office is approximately $23 million. We have a $340 million budget, but that doesn't include administration within our schools. So this is one we'd have to go back to the database and dig into it. But I think to your point, though, the vast majority of our resources are being expended at the school level, but there are still some inefficiencies. So the central office we need to take a look at. We need to look at the number of administrative positions we have at certain schools. I think you may have heard me say this earlier. Some administrative positions, such as technology, we don't have enough of. But then others, we are actually overstaffed.
All right. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Linda from Marlton has to say. Linda, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I volunteer in one of the elementary schools as a bookmate. I read with first graders every once a week. And I just want to say that there's a lot of points of light in this particular school. Anyway, these first graders are reading, and I'm constantly amazed at what they're being taught by their first grade teacher. And I think part of the good thing is the number of students. There are 11 kids in this first grade class. It's a perfect number.
Well,
the teacher can actually do something with them.
Well, no, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Some points of light, Payman.
Well, it's great to hear that. It's always good to hear stories of things going well in our schools. We don't think about your 11 to 1 ratio that you just called out. We don't think about a class size as being determinative of outcomes. So 9.3 to 1 is the district average, and yet we see our challenges, right?
Yeah.
So in our minds, it's about just making sure that the school itself, which again, I believe is the unit of change, that you have a talented principal, a committed staff working together to implement a vision. Those are the outcomes we're looking at. We don't necessarily just kind of focus on any one ratio.
And I can imagine teachers and parents and probably students in this city thinking, 9 or 10 to 1. I mean, their classes in this city, it's 30 to 1.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly raises people's eyebrows. Now, part of that figure is driven by the fact that we have such a high concentration of special ed students. But even when you strip out just the general ed numbers, it's still very, very low.
Yeah.
So, people do wonder about the efficiencies and do wonder, how we're thinking about strategically investing our resources. And we're asking the same questions, and we're trying to figure it all out right now.
And again, that's Payman Ruhanifard, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, and the new superintendent for the Camden Public Schools. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. So what keeps you up at night?
I'll tell you what keeps me up at night. We have focused so much on spending time in the community and listening and evaluating and gaining input. One of my realizations is that is critical, and we're going to continue to do that. But I think what keeps me up at night is the fact that no matter how much time we've spent in the community, there are still a lot of folks that come out and say, you're not listening to us, and you didn't give us an opportunity to weigh in. And this is a tough job in that so many different people have an opinion, and that's the beauty of it, right?
Yeah.
Like that education is so local and so personal, and everyone can opine on it. And so my challenge is just ensuring that I'm taking that feedback and building a plan that's aligned to the feedback, knowing fully well that it's not going to incorporate every last person's thought and opinion. So yeah, we're going to continue to be focused on listening and evaluating.
Well, and I'm sure you've heard about people's regard for their neighborhood schools, whether mm-hmm. you know whether they're a good school or not, feeling like that's our school. Should we rethink neighborhood schools?
Well, I'm a big believer in the neighborhood schools. And, you know, one of the benefits of Renaissance schools, just to kind of call that out as an example again, is that it actually is a neighborhood school. It actually has a zone. It serves a catchment area. And to the other caller who voiced issues about lotteries and cherry picking, you know, we want to get to a place where students actually have geographic preference to the schools closest to them. Because if you think about safety being the headline concern for us, you know, parents want to be nearby their building. They want to know where their students are at all times. And we have a lot of restrictions in the way that we transport our students. So you have to live at least 2 miles away before we can provide busing. So if you're 1.9 miles away and you're walking to school, and that's really challenging given, you know, block to block is pretty touch and go in certain parts of Camden. So the neighborhood school is critical to us, and we're laser focused on it.
You've had a number of different jobs. You're 32 years old, number of different jobs in your career. How many years are you going to give to Camden?
Well, I have a 3-year contract. I've committed myself to my career to public service, and you know, working in a school district is what I deeply care about. Mm-hmm. And I feel so blessed to be in the position that I'm in.
And what does success look like to you when you know you're making progress?
We want to ensure that every student here has access to an excellent school. Every student in Camden.
And an excellent school, meaning it's safe, it has...
Safe, in a modern facility, nurturing environment with high expectations, and the parents feel engaged and are involved.
Well, on that note, Payman Ruhanafard, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you so much, Marty.
You're welcome. And he's the superintendent for the Camden Public Schools, joining us in this hour of Radio Times, the former chief strategy and innovations officer for the Newark Public Schools in New Jersey. He also worked for the chancellor of the New York City Department of Education and taught sixth grade in West Harlem for 2 years with Teach for America. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us, and do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.